Well, hello, good afternoon, Sláinte, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. Back at it live in the new year. Happy New Year to all. My name is Scotty Hertz, fully ensconced once again in my bunker, and joining me on the Skype phone as per normal from the Hall of Justice in the north end of Guelph is Adam A. Donaldson. Adam.
Yes.
You are there. I didn't ask you this time if you're there, because I know you're there. I can sense it. I can sense a presence. He's on the line. Good to hear you once again. We have the normal roster of four topics today. We're going to talk a bit about heritage preservation or lack of. There was a case down the road in Cambridge, or as people in Cambridge call it, Preston. And there's also some things going on locally in this town. Prior to that, we're going to discuss the political situation in the United States. My goodness, we could probably spend a whole hour on that one, but we only have the usual 12 minutes, and it's going to be an action-packed 12 minutes, I tell you. And before the break, we're going to talk about the vaccine rollout, both in Ontario and beyond. That has been hit and miss, let's say. Mm-hmm. And... yes, but before that, the hottest of political potatoes these days, Adam, would be the politicos and other that are that should know better that have been taking vacations. It pains me just to say it in the middle of everything that's going on. And there is probably going to be, well, hopefully some political lessons learned due to this. It sounds like most of the people that have been, well, not implicated, most of the people that did take vacations in the middle of the of everything that's going on has stepped down from certain positions. No one's lost their job, because for them to lose their job, they would need to be unelected or not elected, essentially, with a couple of exceptions in there. But what do you make of this?
Well, they could always resign.
Well, that's the illusion of resign, is like I've stepped down from these three committees that nobody knew I was on, rather than resign completely, right? So,
well, this is it. It's like, so you're not going to do committee work anymore? Okay, as some punishment. But the thing is that there were so many people that we've been able to have... people in the list business, like, create whole lists about all these people who were out of the country, or even just out of the province, but it's mostly out of the country. And it's, you know, it is shocking, it is galling, it is surprising. And what's even kind of more surprising was the kind of hem-haw from some quarters about it. I mean, remember that Rod Phillips is perhaps the most famous scofflaw who had to he resigned as Minister of Finance. I think that was bizarre that they let him resign. I think he should have been outright fired. Mm-hmm. But but yeah, the whole thing with the whole affair with Minister Phillips is that Doug Ford knew he was in St. Bart's, and then it gets picked up by the media. Speaking of the important role of the media, because none of this it's often the media that comes out and says, "Hey, you know, so and so is in St. Bart's, or is in Hawaii, or is trying to sell his vacation home in California," and then Doug Ford comes up, "Oh, habada 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 habada." It's like, yeah, I didn't. Maybe it was kind of inappropriate. I don't know. And then, and, you know, we start seeing all these, so, well, we didn't start seeing them, but we see these social media posts. There was a Zoom call that Ron Phillips did, I think, with faith leaders in his community in Ajax, where he had a staged background of Queens. I mean, it was obviously staged because it was Queens Park in the summer. And a lot of people do this. They have the kind of like the fake, phony, fun background when they're on Zoom.
Sometimes it's just palm trees, right?
Well, right. I mean, just because, you know, their rooms are boring, or they don't want to reveal the layout of their house or whatever they're working on. But I mean, it's fine. But people were observing that you can hear waves in the background on that call. You can hear the gentle waves of lapping the shore. And it all, the whole thing smells. I mean, Rod Phillips made the point that he's not the only one who sort of pre-plans his social media strategy and makes stuff in advance and films videos in advance. And certainly, of course, I mean, I pre-plan posts sometimes, and you know, when I was doing a lot more promotions work, that would be part of the deal. It's like, okay, this is the setting up the tweets for tomorrow. And that part is understandable, but it all just looks so bad when it turns out he's out of the country while the province is in lockdown in St. Bart's on a vacation, non-essential travel, while his constituents are being told to lock down. Don't go out. Only go out when it's essential. Only go out for groceries or work or pharmaceuticals or medical appointments. It's just so tin-eared. And between Phillips and everyone else, this is like, you know, you thought that the Wii scandal was the stupid scandal of 2020. No, it turns out Vacation Gate is the stupid scandal of 2020.
Oh my God, they've slapped a gate on the end of it. The surprise. Yeah, the Rod Phillips, a couple of things. One is that I don't think people go to St. Bart's just to vacation. If you remember back when Justin Trudeau was on the Aga Khan's Island with certain other politicos, Rona Ambrose was on a yacht that was docked in St. Bart's, and that was a big deal then as well. This is all pre-COVID. This is a few years ago. People don't just, you don't just go to St. Bart's like you do to Acapulco, right? So there's, I believe there's more to this story. But yeah, I think the main thing, whether it was a perception or not, is that is the deception that people feel that this whole putting the syrup on the pancakes and the fireside chat and having to pack a sweater to go to St. Bart's to be in that, it's 30 whatever degrees in St. Bart's, you're on the Zoom with a sweater on, you are pretending that you're not somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're not wearing a sweater in St. Bart's. There's just no way. Well, he was, I guess. I don't know. It must have air. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't matter. But it's the most egregious example, I think, of the whole thing. And there is a range of this, right? There mm-hmm. is. It's mm-hmm. a sliding scale of the people that didn't care. It's just like, I went to the beach. But then there was other people that you'd say, well, there's a maybe in there. Like the two, I guess it was the two liberals that went to the States to see ailing family members. You had mentioned the one that went for the property matters. You could get a property agent to handle that. And the trip to Greece.
Yeah, that was Nikki Ashton.
By Nikki Ashton was to see her grandmother, who's probably not going to make it. Some people are making the argument. It's like, well, you know, my relative is in long-term care and we said goodbye on Zoom. I don't see why you had to go to Greece. But I think it was Jason Kenney who, and United Conservatives hold the record on this. It's seven, right? Seven UCP mm-hmm. members, and one of the, was she the communications or chief of staff?
The chief of staff. It was six MLAs and the chief of staff, Jason Kenney's chief of
staff. Chief of staff has resigned her job, right?
No, Tracy Allard is the one you're talking about. She was the Minister of Municipal Affairs,
right.
And she resigned from her cabinet post. To my knowledge, everyone else is still at least MLAs. I know that some.
Oh, and the senator as well. There was a senator as well.
That was a federal senator, though.
And again, he did the same thing during the messaging. You know, this Christmas is going to be different, but not for me because I'm going to be on the beach, right? Like it's, boy.
Well, the thing is, like, yeah, you're right about the whole my grandma's sick in Delaware, which I think was Samir Zubiri's. Reason for being out of the country. And again, it's one of these very thin lines. It's like, I think everyone can understand the desperate desire to be with a loved one who's sick and may not make it, even if it means sort of breaking the rules. I mean, that stuff can kind of slide. But, you know, Tracy Allard goes to Hawaii and she's like, well, it's a family tradition. We go every year. And it's like, okay,
yes.
First of all, privileged much. Second of all, you know, how many family traditions were sacrificed? I mean, even just like basic family traditions, you know,
like a turkey. Yeah.
Or
shared
my mom,
turkey. Yeah.
My mom didn't get to see her granddaughters for Christmas this year. Mm. You know, they're three and one, and they're not going to be three and one again. And, you know, who knows how many more Christmases my mom has. No offense to my mom, but she is in her 70s. So
live long and prosper. Adam's mom. But yes, no, I know what you're saying there, yeah.
But and then you had the flip side of it too. You had I saw a Twitter video with Michelle Rempel Gardner, and she's like going off the deep end about like, I want to go home to Oklahoma for Christmas, but I know the CBC mob would be after me. And it's like, okay, first of all, is your home in Alberta in your riding, or is it in Oklahoma? And second of all, the mob isn't after you. The mob wants you to, you know, stand up for your principles. And by the way, stand up for your riding. And by the way, why isn't your riding good enough for you to live in, by the way? It's just, there's so many levels to this. Instead of saying, you know what, I appreciate, and this goes into like an overarching thing that we're seeing right now with people with getting lockdown fatigue or COVID fatigue or whatever it is. And it's like, it's not that I don't understand that. It's just that, mm-hmm. you know, the depression was 10 years. World War II was 6 years. World War I was 4.5 years. The Great Recession was 4 years. We can't, you know, keep this up for another couple of months till we all get the jab. I mean, are we this fragile? Snowflakes, if you will. That's what I think people are. I mean, that's one of the things I'm sort of wrapping my head around. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, poor Michelle Rempel-Garner can't go home to Oklahoma. Well, you know, I can't just browse the stacks at, you know, my local used DVD store without wearing a mask. And it's like, that's relatively small suffering. It's just, you know, try and keep things in perspective. And it's just like we have over a dozen politicians here who just seem to completely lose perspective. And not just politicians, too, I should add, because there's a Guelph connection. You know, Dr. Tom Stewart, mm-hmm. who's the CEO of St. Joseph's Health Systems, while his people at long-term care homes are working overtime, working themselves to the nub, putting themselves in danger, potentially putting their patients in danger, he's going to the Barbados. Talk about a tin ear.
Yeah. I was gonna say not ex-political, but he was on the main committee too, right? The Ontario committee.
Yeah.
So he's stepped down from that. Doesn't have to do that now. He seems to be smiling in all the pictures. So it must have been a good vacation or their file photos. I'm not sure, but yeah, that's definitely, especially when your people are the front lines in this. That is this is somebody that just doesn't get it. And I, you know, as to whether he will have to pay for that, I mean, it's a little different in terms of elected versus appointment. So, I mean, who knows where that's going to go? But yeah, I think there's still more stories that are going to leak out. But yeah, Doug Ford had made it pretty clear over and over again, telling the province, and I guess this would include his MPPs, to not travel, but they're not getting the chiding that he gave the partiers and the kids, all that. Come on, guys. Come on. Like, what are you doing? You know, like,
right.
That, that does include you, elected political types. Jason Kenney, too, his initial reaction was kind of like, well, no laws are broken. And technically, he's not wrong, right? I mean, what he's saying, like, you know, Nikki Ashton went to Greece. She was allowed into Greece. There was some people implying that, oh, she only got that treatment because she's a politician, but I don't think that's the case. Like, their rules are their rules, and they're not going to let you in for their reasons, the same reasons as our border is closed and Michelle Rumpel can't go to Oklahoma, although I don't know why she didn't bother, or she seems like the type that would just go ahead and do that kind of thing. And if the two Liberals can go down there, I don't see why she can't. But yeah, the question with her, at least, is where is her home? And that remains to be seen. I think we'll probably see her in the next election as to where her home is and how quickly she packs if she does lose. But she won't lose. Anyway, yeah. Where was I going there? I don't know.
I don't vacation. Know either, no. But I think your point about Doug Ford and Jason Kenney, though, is but like Jason Kennedy's New Year's Day non-reaction was really, I mean, he was also your worst politician of the year, so it shouldn't be that.
He had the tone. It's the tone. It's like, well, no rules were broken, so what am I supposed to do about it? I was like, oh, shut up.
Your point about Doug Ford, though, is spot on, because he has been and kind of riding high in this whole premier dad reputation, this whole wagging the finger, telling you to behave
coming
yourself.
Down to the basement to yell at you, come on, guys. Yeah.
And so for him to come out and go hamana about, you know, Rod Phillips.
He knew.
Because if it was, I mean, kudos to Doug Ford for not taking the traditional family vacation to Florida, which I know he probably missed. But I also want to add, too, that there was kind of like a bounty on right wing social media out to find out where Trudeau was spending the holidays, because, you know, he was. But neither here.
Don't
nor
tell
there,
me. Was it Rebel Media?
I don't know if it was anyone explicitly attached to Rebel. But anyway, the thing with Ford is that, you know, he has this habit of wanting to get out the hickory stick, you know, do the father knows best routine. And that was sorely lacking here. To say to Rod Phillips several weeks later, like, hey, get back here. Come on, get back here.
Get your butt back here.
And then to let him, like, gingerly put in his letter of resignation after after he, you know, does a mea culpa at the airport.
Had a bit of a Morneau feel to it, right?
Yeah, just like, nuh-uh. Hmm. You say to Rod Phillips, you get on a plane right now. I don't care what hour it is. I don't care how much it costs. When you get to Toronto, you don't go home. You leave Pearson. You come to Queen's Park. Whatever hour it is, I will be in my office. And then when he gets there, you fire him. You don't accept resignation. You don't go, I wish you hadn't done this. It's like, no. The whole point of this government is that we're drawing a line in the sand against COVID. Here you are, if not one of the top five ministers, definitely one of the top three. I mean, in terms of position, not in terms of, you know, personality.
Essentially
or any other.
The deputy premier, right? Like the right hand.
Well, there has been a deputy premier.
No, but has been considered that over the considered that over the years. Like it is the top job.
But he should have been made an example of. And I mean, at the end of the day, he's still an MPP. He's still getting his salary. He's still getting paid. Although, from what I understand, he's also a wealthy man to begin with.
Well, but, yeah, he was with Chappelle. So Bill Morneau, Chappelle, right. Like there's a connection there. And I wonder if he was bringing back some good intel from St. Bart's. I don't know. Well, I'd like to explore that further. I don't know how the heck I would do that. I have no connections.
Aside, I mean, these are the type of political situations where people scream out for blood. And in lieu of blood, people will actually wouldn't mind seeing him suffer a bit. And I mean, this isn't about, you know, people in politics not paying people in politics and making sure they live in poverty and taking vows of poverty by being politicians. That's not about it at all. It's just that there's a situation here. People are tired. People want to know their government is taking action. There are legitimate questions because, as we're going to talk about in the next segment, there's tremendous uncertainty about how effective the government is currently being. And then on top of all this, you have Rod Phillips saying, peace out. I'm going to St. Bart's for a month. It looks bad, it smells bad, it is bad, and you can't just sort of let him gingerly resign with his ass intact and let that be an end of it. Sorry, Rod Phillips, but you know, people were demanding a sacrifice, and you needed to be thrown into the volcano.
Well, I'm fairly sure he'll be reminded of it come the next election and several times.
I hope so. It is Ajax, though.
It's a wait and see. So we'll keep him on the radar, but at the back of the, I was going to use front burner, back burner again, but that's a different podcast. But speaking of, well, not really a different podcast, but a different realm. The lockdown has changed up a bit. Is that right today, Adam? I just heard a little bit before we came on the air, but school is being extended. Remote learning is being extended for a couple of weeks. Is that right?
Yes, remote learning in Southern Ontario is being unilaterally extended to the 25th. I think it's only an extra couple of weeks in Northern Ontario. But yeah, all schools will not go back to in-person learning until the 25th.
I have a friend who is a gym teacher, and he had some interesting insights about teaching gym remotely. But that's the exception rather than the rule, I guess. But we're still, I guess, the Southern regions, 27 health regions were supposed to stay in until the January 27th, and the North was going to loosen the restrictions a bit sooner. But of course, in all those areas, as you had mentioned, the vaccine rollout has been a bit of a hit and miss so far. There was quite a few doctors, epidemiologists, medical people. Anytime they speak to the media, it's, you know, the vaccines when they're sitting in the freezer aren't much good. I've also seen quite a few doctors, medical professionals posting on Twitter and other places saying, I offered up my services to do this. I will do it for free, whatever it takes to get vaccine into people. And my offers have been ignored. So it sounds like there are quite a few people out there that want to contribute in some way that are qualified to do that. But yet there's this a bit of this piecemeal. What does Ford keep saying? The bumps in the road. And I'm also a little bit tired at this point of listening to the general General Hillier, in particular, his the speculating openly about, well, you know, maybe we should just give everybody one jag. Like, are you just making this up? You know, medication says a certain thing, and you're supposed to do that thing. And the one thing a doctor or anybody will tell you is that don't go off label. And he just seemed to be speculating wildly at this conference, saying, oh, you know, maybe we'll just give everybody one. And then you might get the second one. It's like, no, dude, no. That is not how this is supposed to work. You're supposed to be in charge of logistics, distribution, and getting this stuff to people. And it's kind of like, well, maybe we'll do this. No good. Especially at 20 grand a month, no good. So anyway, sorry, that was my, I derailed there. Excuse me.
No, and I was going to make that point too, yeah. That you can't just, you know, come up there and, you know,
spin this? You know, like, really?
Right. It's not even spin. It's just riffing. It's like, well, I think we should see about whether
just give
or not
one.
To just get one shot of Mizzou.
That's what we did back in Kabul. You know, we'll just do that.
I think that'd be okay. I mean, and that's part of the problem when you see someone with the title general and think that automatically makes them a one-size-fits-all leader. And oh, not
yeah, like that the dude in the U.S. that's in charge of it, he sounds kind of worried all the time. Yeah, well, the vaccines are coming out. They really are. Like, sorry, not to mock the guy, but it's just like, he didn't seem like really confident. Like, the federal general, sorry, his name escapes me.
I didn't know Fat Tony was in charge of vaccine distribution in the States. I thought it was another guy.
Yeah, Fat Tony. That's right. I'll give you 20% off. Yeah, I don't know. Sounds more like John Travolta. But anyway, never mind my impersonations. I'm so glad you got the first Simpsons reference of the year in there. That was excellent. Yeah, this some aspects of this are Simpsons-like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers are not great if we're trying to, like, 1,000 long-term care residents have gotten the first shot so far. One-third of long-term care homes are currently under some form of lockdown or because of an outbreak. 7 out of 10 vaccine doses are currently in deep freeze waiting for distribution. And I mean, again, there's kind of a local connection here too, because on Monday Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph Public Health came out and said, oh, we're having to delay the initial 500 shots we're going to give to long-term care workers because our shipment's been delayed. Turns out Pfizer's not getting them out as fast as they said they were going to be. And then Pfizer comes out and says, no, we're delivering stuff just fine. I think you're getting notice from the medical of health, Ministry of Health, that you are behind in terms of a day. It turned out to be a day behind, although there was some initial speculation it was going to be like a week behind. But it turned out they got the stuff Thursday. They got the stuff Thursday morning.
I got the stuff.
Tuesday morning, and they were able to proceed Wednesday, starting to hand out vaccines. But I mean, this is the kind of stuff that honestly shouldn't be happening, where Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph is like at the loading docks waiting for the vaccine to arrive on Monday, and then the medical officer of health goes in, checks your email back from the winter break, probably. Not to say that Dr. Mercer was on vacation or anything, but you know, first thing Monday morning, you go in, turn on your computer, check your email, and voila, the Ministry of Health is telling you those vaccines you've been waiting for forever are going to be delayed. And that's sort of like how you kick off the year. That's kind of, you know, that doesn't really instill much confidence, especially since, I mean, not to say that anything in terms of vaccine distribution is easy, but this is literally supposed to be the easy part of the pandemic. And just, we've got the vaccine. Now it's just a matter of sticking it in as many arms as possible as fast as we get vaccines. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't seem to be happening, despite however many times Doug Ford comes out and says, no, we're heating things up. We're getting them out faster. And the more he comes out and says we're getting them out faster, the less faster they seem to be coming out, which, again, doesn't instill that public confidence that here we are at the end, light at the end of the tunnel, and we keep running towards the light, but it doesn't seem to be getting more light in this tunnel. And then, you know, at the same time, you're just lengthening the time horizon before we can get back to quote unquote normal, which is also not helped by the fact that, you know, we're now averaging about 3,000 new cases a day, which again, it's just we're kind of getting it from all sides here.
Mm-hmm. And the ninth healthcare worker that has died of COVID-19 was a registered nurse. What was her name? Maureen Ambersley. She worked at Extendicare in Mississauga. So hopefully the goal of the government, which had Trudeau, my goodness. I almost said Trump. Ford. It's one of those days. It's been one of those years so far, 2021. January 21st is the goal to vaccinate all long-term care residents and caregivers in the hot zones, which is Toronto, Peel region.
Away, by the way.
What's that?
It's 2 weeks today, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, exactly. So Toronto, Peel, York region, and Windsor, Essex. So when they were saying this, it made it sound like initially it made it, if you're not listening closely or just read it in passing, makes it sound like all of long-term care are going to be vaccinated and all the workers are going to be vaccinated. That is not the case. It's entirely possible that things could accelerate now that delivery is happening. When you were talking about it, I was thinking about the meme making the rounds of the two Spider-Men pointing at each other saying, no, it was you. No, it was you. No, I want the vaccine. No, they're supposed to deliver it. No, it's over there. It came earlier. That was locally, it was bumped to Friday, but started happening Tuesday, because of course everybody has to have the here is the person that got the first vaccine moment, which is fine. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I think it's great that people know that vaccines are happening in town, and I tell you, if they made the call,
it's a public awareness campaign.
Exactly.
And it's also showing real people getting jabs in the arm to demonstrate public efficacy for the vaccine.
Yeah, and there was that wave of the famous. I think it was started in the UK with Ian McKellen and that getting the jab. It's like, just get it. Just get it, people. So, but we'll see. And talking about distribution, I honestly think, if they had said to me, you can get this jab, but you have to come at 4 a.m, I'd be there. Honestly, I would go. Like that is how dedicated I am to getting this. I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I think the greater percentage of people would be like, yeah, it's kind of like getting an ultrasound at 6 a.m. because things are busy. It's like, I don't care. Like if that's what it takes. But if they're holding back, the health department didn't make this excuse, but it's like, everything that happened over the holidays, like, well, we have staffing issues. Like, well, why do you have staffing issues? Some of them have COVID. Some of them are on the beach somewhere. I'm not saying this about anybody of the ground troops, but it's like you can't. It's a false equation. Hospitals don't close Christmas Day. They're taking people in. There probably is no. And if there are medical professionals and people that are able to do these procedures that are offering themselves up, they should let them do that. That is what logistics is all about, right? Distribution and making things happen. So that better start happening, or the grumbling that's going on right now is going to get, will get even grumblier? I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Why not?
Yeah, sure. We'll end on that note. We'll end on that note, a completely made up word. It's impossible what they're doing. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. We are heard every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. We're going to take a little bit of a break and a breather because I definitely need one, and I'm sure Adam does too. Play a little bit of music, and then we will get back at it in short order. So please stay tuned.
This is our destiny. No greater love could be. Give me your hand, walk with me. Walk hand in hand with me. Oh, this is our destiny.
And that's our Royal City Records pick of the week. Royal City Records, your source for new and vintage vinyl in downtown Guelph. That was the unmistakable voice of Jerry Marsden, Jerry and the Pacemakers, from I think 1964 or 1965, and the song is Walk Hand in Hand, one of my father's absolute favorite songs. Jerry Marsden died on the weekend at the age of 78. I think we're at that point where we're going to lose a lot of those rock and rollers, but contrary to popular belief, it was not of COVID-19. which is an assumption I guess people make these days, and rightly so in a lot of ways, especially in the UK, because it is still rolling out of control. And speaking of out of control, Adam, it was doom scrolling. It was everything yesterday. I thought we were just going to have a nice, gentle time talking about the Electoral College votes went through and the Georgia vote, whatever that was, which went for the Democrats. All of that, well, sidelined, but also folded right into the story of the, what are we calling it, riot, insurrection, rebellion. I've heard all of the adjectives. Just an unbelievable scene in Washington, D.C. yesterday.
Yes. Unbelievable is probably as benign an adjective as I can think of. There was this whole sense of dread about, and it wasn't necessarily dread about a riot or an insurrection or anything like that. It was just a sense of something's going to go down, because Mike Pence released a statement before about how he was going to just exercise his constitutional duty and count the electors and sort of be the MC of that ceremony, which is pretty much all he's allowed to do.
A rubber stamping, right? Just straight from, just do it.
Right. And then we knew that there were several members of the House who were going to raise a fuckus and a fracas.
A fracas, yeah.
there were several members of the Senate who were going to go along with that purely out of self-dealing political interest, whether that is Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, who think they are going to be candidates for Republican candidate for president in 2024, even though they're both equally disgusting, or Kelly Loeffler, who is trying to save her Senate seat at the last minute by going along with plans to disrupt the. I mean, this is basically a 35-minute procedure that they were planning to extend into an all-day, all-night affair.
Filibuster the thing, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, at the end of the if the most benign version of what happened yesterday was going to be like this pain in the butt thing where CNN was going to have to go back and forth to it all day and everybody making speeches about how they think there must have been massive irregularities and a ton of evidence nobody's found yet about all this voter fraud, which, I mean, if there's a good thing that came out of it is that I did watch, excuse me, some of the Senate procedures when they got back to work last night, and just like the complete dejection on the face of Kelly Loeffler as she said she was withdrawing her objections. The riot kind of made that worthwhile.
Yeah, and the stuff that's trickling out today about the riot, yeah, riot is probably the best way to describe it. It reminded me of it was very serious, of course, and four people died as one shot and three of medical distress by the sounds of it. But it had the which is terrible, which is awful, regardless of your politics. But to me, it had the feel of a looking at it in retrospect and the pictures that came out today and some of the footage. It was like a frat party out of control. Many, many years ago, the Mills residence on campus at U of G went co-ed. And it was all male until then. And then when that happened, the people that were living there, the boys that were living there, destroyed the place. And that's what it looked like. Shields going through the window and all that stuff that was happening. And right away, and I thought of it as well, and it's been kind of the tone today, if that was anybody else doing that protest and that, you know, the picture making the rounds of the cops at the Lincoln Memorial when Black Lives Matter was coming to a head in the summer there. Those comparisons are completely legit. There is no other gang that would have been allowed to do that. And a lot of that, too, is because of Trump empowering them. They were at the Trump rally, and Trump said all of that stuff that he has been saying, all of the garbage, all of the falsehoods. You know, we really won. You know, you name it. I don't even want to repeat that much of it because we know the story. It's the same old busted record, right?
He said, we're going to march up to Capitol Hill. I will see you there. We're going to march up to Capitol Hill. He gave them the order.
Yeah, and some of them had shirts. The sweatshirts were ready, right? The rebellion is on and had the date on it. And there was anti-Semitic stuff. And there was Confederate flags. And blue line flags as well, weirdly. But I mean, the whole thing was weird to a degree. White power symbols, like just all of that across the board stuff. And lots of anti-masking or poorly worn masks. Like it all came to a head. It just this big mass heading towards the and you know, calling that one dude with the fur coat and the horns Chewbacca is offensive to Chewbacca in my book. But that it's comedy, it's tragedies, tragic comedy. How they were caught so off guard is like, you know, how is this possible, right? You say that, it's like, well, you know, we're is it because they're expecting the white people to behave? Those little gates, like a riot is, but the people that are calling it like an insurrection or rebellion or, you know, this is the end of the government. If they were even like 20% more organized than they were, it could have very well been. All those open carry people, had they been training in the woods, had they been more organized, I mean, it would have been a bloodbath standoff. This was more of a circus.
Yeah.
But if it was more along the lines of those guys, you know, the West Coast that took over the park, right? I can't even remember their names.
Bundy.
Yeah. I'm just riffing a bit here. But if it was those guys who were trained and packed a bunch of ammo, thankfully DC is a place where you cannot carry weapons, open, conceal carry, whatever. If it was another state, this may be a completely different story today.
It's, I mean, there are a number of things that sort of went horribly wrong. And you're right, if these people had been slightly more organized. But, I mean, that's part of the story, too, is that Ellie Reed, she used to be with Vice, now she's with CNN, she was, like, in the blank with a lot of these people and talking to them. It's like, well, what are you hoping to accomplish here? And they none of them had any idea.
It's and the revolution, man. That one girl who was like all dripping with tear gas. Like, hey, you sure?
What was the goal? Was it to stop the count? Was it to arrest? I mean, there were actually pictures of like some of these people with like zip ties. So they were like intended to take hostages.
Mm.
Or maybe they thought they were. I don't know. It's just, what was the goal? And she's talking to these people and they're like, well, Trump just told us to come here. And there's no goal to any of this. It's just to be disruptive, which is why they fell on first principles, which was to take pictures and videos and post them on social media, which is how a lot of these people are being identified now. But I mean, looking at what happened, thinking a lot about Jamie Raskin, who was a Maryland congressman, his son took his own life last week, so he's dealing with some stuff. I was thinking about Jackie Speier, congresswoman from California, who survived Jonestown. Mm-hmm. This is probably this is probably two more sieges in her life than she didn't want.
Mm.
I was thinking about the squad, because if there were any, you know, scalps that these people would be after,
they would be first.
Right, exactly.
I saw that tweet from AOC, one of her shorter ones. She was like, I'm okay, and it got like 500,000 likes because it's...
Yeah.
It was definitely at that point where something like that could happen, and thankfully they all got away. Those gas masks under the seats, I think a lot of them didn't even know that they were equipped for that, but you need to be equipped for every eventuality there. I mean, you would think part of that would be more police or security, because they're, you know, they seem to be able to provide them at certain times. And there's many layers of security in a place like DC as well. But they called in the National Guard. And then when I saw the National Guard, whatever point that was in the evening last night, they were just kind of standing around. So they'd obviously cleared them out with tear gas and the usual things rather than lethal or semi-lethal ammo. But they were not ready, and they're calling. Obviously, they're calling for people's resignations. I think the police chief down there, among others. But if I saw it right on Twitter before the show, and I'm not sure if this is ongoing, but I think it is. Nancy Pelosi and others are wanting to impeach Trump. He's got 2 weeks left, and they want to take him down before he's out the door.
I think there's a lot of concern about what else he can do, and again, it's not necessarily that there's a plan afoot.
Just drop a nuke on Israel, like, or not Israel. Oh no, Iran, because he's got Iran. The codes. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, something like that. It's really quite shocking what this president can get people to do for him, even without a goal in mind. And there's going to be bigger questions than, I mean, I highly doubt the 25th Amendment is going to be evoked. We're at the end of the day on Thursday and nobody's brought any impeachment articles forward. But having said that, I mean, there's going to be a lot of serious questions about the security situation on Capitol Hill, because, I mean, that's a big mess, because you have Capitol Police, you have Metro Police, you have federal authorities. You know, who was in charge? How did this fall apart? Why weren't they better prepared? Why weren't Capitol Police in riot gear? I mean, from what I understand, they're basically no better than mall cops. But then why wouldn't you bring in like proper police who are properly equipped? What about these police who are letting people in past the barricades? That one TikTok of the police officer was opening up the barricades to let people through. The other TikTok of the officer who was getting his picture taken with rioters. Are these people going to be punished? What about, I mean, the pressure is really going to be on for DC statehood now. And the mayor of DC was saying that this morning. It's like, we're not in charge of our own National Guard. The president's in charge of our National Guard. Does that make a lot of sense in this situation where you need to get the National Guard out against the president's own supporters? And I think she said point blank, like, we're going to be pushing hard for statehood when the new Senate comes into effect, which, of course, is the news that got lost in all of this, which is that the Senate is officially flipped, because Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff are both now the senators of Georgia, which means Georgia is, you know, effectively a blue state, at least for the time being,
which is that in itself is incredible. Even though it was a very slim margin, and that's why they had these runoffs. But, you know, Ossoff is the first millennial senator, because it's generally a realm of the old. You know, let's be realistic about it. You know, there's been 100-year-old senators at one point. And Reverend Warnock was the first black senator from Georgia. And preaches at Martin Luther King Jr.'s church. I mean, there's a lot of firsts there. That would have been the top story probably had not all of this happened. But that's so... It's all blue. It's all blue in Washington now, with Kamala Harris making the deciding on tie votes, right?
The Senate. And that's going to be another big test, is like who has learned their lessons. I mean, it was pretty clear neither Ted Cruz nor Josh Hawley have learned their lessons. So, the other big thing, security wise speaking, is like finding out who these people are, and putting them behind bars. And I don't say that lightly, because I mean, I'm not a free speech absolutist, but I'm absolute light. But they're just like, these people led an insurrection. Everyone on social media seems to know who they are, because their pictures are being posted all over the place. So the big question is, why aren't they in custody right now? We know who, like, this, the one guy who was sitting at Nancy Pelosi's desk, he's from Arkansas. He had to stay somewhere in DC last night. Are you mean to tell me that we're not calling hotels to try and find this blanker and put him behind bars?
I would strongly suspect that the FBI and others are working on it, unless they've just said, Trump, we'll just let it go. I don't know.
I hope not.
We'll see.
I mean, they made 68 at the press conference earlier today. They said they made 68 arrests so far from what happened yesterday. 68 arrests. If those people had... if they were black, if they were brown, or if they were Muslim, 68 would be the minimum number of them in the morgue.
That I don't think that's... Yeah, you're not wrong there.
Yeah.
And thankfully that wasn't the case. But
Capitol
building last attacked by British troops in what, 1813 was it, or 1814?
It was 14,
A heritage building, not unlike the Preston Springs Hotel, doesn't have quite the pedigree. People who are local from the Tri-Cities area know it well. If you're ever driving down into what is now Cambridge that way, giant hotels, looks like it's dropped, like... You drive past it and say, why is that there? Well, it's not there anymore. Knocked down over the holiday, and I'm not sure whether that machine was chipping away on New Year's Day, but there did seem to be an urgency to the matter. It's like, oh, it's a safety matter. We need to take it down right away, even though it's been there for, I don't know, 140 years, whatever the heck it was. And I don't think people realize how much power that, like, a chief building officer has in a town. If he says, or they say, that it's not safe, then something can get nuked right away, and the heritage designation, or it doesn't matter. That's not to say that this person was acting maliciously necessarily, but the great simmering question is, why did all this have to happen now in the middle of pandemic and whatever, even though for years and years people have been trying to get the Preston Springs Hotel back on the grid and in people's collective conscience as something that should be preserved.
Mm-hmm. I do believe, I don't know exactly the full extent of the chief building planner's powers, but I think that is one of them, about being able to sort of, if it's a matter of public safety and it's a matter of liability, I mean, especially liability, then they do have that power. The question is not whether or not the chief building planner for the city of Cambridge has the power, but why was an emergency demolition issued on Christmas Eve? Why was there a closed meeting of city council on December 23rd where the chief building planner sort of laid out the need to have this emergency demo? Why was it in camera? Because from granted, I am not,
I know you hate in camera. That's like your biggest pet peeve. Get out of camera now, or Adam's coming.
I don't hate in camera. I hate overuse of in camera. I hate like trigger happy in camera meetings.
It has its place.
It has its place, but from what I understand about the reasons in the Municipal Act to go in camera, there is a proviso in there about real estate. But from what I just off the top of my head, real estate meaning like buying and selling real estate. I mean, and people will be aware that the former jail lands in Guelph are sort of on the block, and that sale is being handled. When council gets an update about that, it's in camera, because obviously you don't want it to be public knowledge, you know, what price you are negotiating with a potential buyer for the land. I mean,
and
that part I understand.
Several players involved that too, different levels of government and that, so they have to keep their cards close, I think, and
exactly. You don't want buyer A to know that you're offering buyer B a potentially sweeter deal because you like their plan better or what have you. I mean, these kind of maneuvers that happen in
give me a dollar and you can have something like
well,
that.
Well, hopefully not. That's a pretty big piece of pie. Well, anyway, that stuff I understand. But what was there that were necessitated an in-camera meeting to talk about? And the only reason I can think of is because they didn't want 30 or 40 delegates to come out about saying save the hotel.
Shut out that's I would agree with that. There this does have a whiff of the shutting out the delegates, because it's kind of the same in Guelph too. The usual suspects, right, have something to say about it. But now now the demands are we want a full inquiry as to what happened, which sounds sort of like police story kind of stuff. But it couldn't hurt to unwind what happened and try and not necessarily stop it if it's required, but at least figure out what the process is and where it failed, because there are a ton of people that felt they didn't have a say. Now, this building, I don't know if you've seen any, you probably saw some of the pictures online, Adam, but I watched it. It was a popular building with urban explorer types.
Yeah.
And the one that I watched with the guy going through this place, it was pretty clapped out, like it was done, and it looked like on one of the spots they were trying to do some kind of renovation that failed. Interestingly, it sounds like the last use of this building before it closed 20 years ago was as a senior/retirement residence, which I found very interesting. But when you when you look at this place in particular, and you can draw the lines anywhere, I guess, but number one would be, where do you park to go to that thing? It was probably okay back in horse and buggy days. You just pastured your horse across the road in Little Preston, but now, or up the hill or whatever. But now it's, you know, there's just no way. But again, all of heritage designation in that is each building is unique. And, you know, the heritage characteristics in some ways are what, how people see a place. I mean, we know that the Preston Springs Hotel was no Notre Dame. It wasn't a Church of Our Lady kind of thing. But, you know, this is the burning question. And, you know, you were talking, I saw it in the Politico, how this is going to come on the radar locally, and that certain areas in Guelph are going to be or planned for some kind of special heritage designation coming up. Is that right?
Well, it's on Committee of the Whole on Monday. They're going to be talking about the Cultural Heritage Action Plan, which was thoroughly decimated at the Heritage Guelph meeting last month.
In that they didn't like it, or
they didn't like it. No, they hated it.
They wanted it tighter, or they wanted it more loose. Is that?
Well, there are a number of problems. Number one is that it's too kind of post-settler centric. Another problem is that there didn't seem to be a lot of explicit feedback gathered from Indigenous communities and other communities in Guelph. And then one of the bigger problems was it didn't sort of explicitly outline protections for like key areas like the downtown or Catholic Hill, which if you're going to like make a list of culturally sensitive areas that should be probably declared districts, I mean, those would probably be the first two. Or at least maybe now that, you know, the university neighborhood is protected, the Brooklyn Hill College area is a protected district. Well,
and they're 50 years too late or 60 years too late to protect the downtown. Because when you see old photos of right. the downtown, it's like it's a completely different city or town. But
right, I did a podcast with Leanne Caron about heritage, and so I was looking for appropriate pictures, and I was like going through the old archives on the library website, and
you say, "Wow, look at that!" Yeah, especially the old library in particular was something else.
Yeah. Like the pictures of the demo of the Carnegie Library are like so heartbreaking. So, I mean, this is like a sore spot going back to like the 1960s. The 1960s was kind of the worst of it, where they decided to just like nuke, not literally, of course, but really take out a lot of these old stone buildings downtown, up to and including the Carnegie Library, and replace them with these new agey post-Cold War, cold concrete structures. But I mean, the protection. Downtown is kind of a unique case because heritage buildings will get that attention. What people seem to be particularly concerned about is properties like the old Crawley Farmhouse, which is in the south end, which is like there in the middle of the Hanlon Creek Business Park, where the property owner has done a pretty good job of like keeping it up to specs, but they don't know what to do with it because they can't hook it up to the municipal water. They're not allowed to bring in a septic system of their own. They say they can't offload the property. They can't offload the house. Like they can't like move the house to a different property. They haven't had an interest, which is kind of what comes back to the Preston Springs Hotel as well. People wanted it saved, but people didn't know how to save it. They couldn't get a plan together to save it. And you're right, part of the problem was parking. Part of the problem is access. This new road, new-ish, that goes right by it but doesn't make access into the property easy. And so there's just a big question here, and it goes much bigger than this one sort of case about how the demolition order was issued and all that. I appreciate people want to get to the bottom of that, but I think the issue is so much bigger. It's like, what do you do when you have a heritage building that needs to be protected, but every step a property owner takes to try and protect it by turning it into something else or by trying to hook it up to municipal water and being unable to, like what choice are people left with at the end of it? I suppose the city of Cambridge or the region of Waterloo could have bought it straight out and done something with it. But I mean, that's something that you need a plan for. That's something you need money for. So just, you know, how do we, I guess, circle the square of we love our heritage, we want to protect it. But on the plus side, when it comes to the practical matter of actually saving that heritage, we can't seem to be able to get the job done. There's some empty middle there, some mushy middle, some foggy middle that we need to sort of clear the smog on to try and understand so that another Preston Springs Hotel thing doesn't happen here or in Cambridge.
Absolutely. Well, definitely a topic for another day. You do have some stuff on Guelph Politico there if people wanted to read up more and learn more about our own heritage in town and hear your interview with Leanne Caron. So rolling right into that, Adam, where if people want to find more about you and what you do, where will they find that?
Well, all that stuff and more is on Guelph Politico at guelphpolitico.ca. I'm on the socials at Adam A. Donaldson as well.
And if you want my stuff, it's Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. We're heard here every Friday. Really got to go home. Or upstairs at least. 5 o'clock every Thursday. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. If you want to find this show, we're also in the archives at CFRU.ca for your listening pleasure 24/7. So thank you so much for joining us. Please join us next week and for more of Open Sources. And take care. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be right back.